scrambles left, winds up right behind. He's got time in the 10 to the 5. Yes! To the end zone. Touchdown. Darren Sproles gone. Touchdown.
This is the Root NY Podcast, talking all things NFL. Now here's your hosts, Root NY.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of Woot and Why, episode 61, 18th of July.
2015.
How are you?
Good mate, good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. It's been an okay week.
Still drafting our MFL 10 League 2 at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Had a bit of an accident on that with a bloke selecting the Bills wide receiver group,
which you can't do, but they're
available on the app, which is a bit of annoying.
That would have been an incredible pickup.
Yes, the whole group, but actually, you know what? Probably not.
Yeah. If it was Green Bay, then maybe.
Yeah, then you're in a world of good. But so things are going well. We're now sponsored, mate.
Mm-hmm.
Not really, but Audible Australia, everyone, if you listen to podcasts or are familiar with audible.com, they do audiobooks and the like, and they've just come out here to Australia now, so there is an Australian version of Audible, so in the next week or so, we'll be officially signed up with them, so that's exciting news, and then we've got some more news coming in the next few weeks, resulting with us in another partnership that we have formed, but we can't reveal too much at the moment. But we're excited about it.
Good times ahead.
We are, yeah. We're really pumped about it. But please, we could always do with your help. So please give us some iTunes reviews. It helps us go up the charts a little bit higher. We worked out that it is based on reviews, not listens. So if we can get more reviews, that would be great.
Yep.
Even bad ones, we don't care. Just review.
But if you leave a 5-star one, we'll read it out.
Yeah, that's the benefit. That's the benefit. Before we get Chris Guscott on the line from Canton, Ohio, with the Australian Gridiron team. Did you watch the ESPYs?
Yes.
What did you think?
Yeah, I feel like each year is becoming less about sport. If it kind of makes sense, I know obviously it's all about sport, but it's becoming, I don't know, more of a talking point. It's
like a social thing.
But I
admire Caitlyn Jenner's courage. She is, he won a gold medal for the Olympics. So the people that say, oh, he's not an athlete, this is a sporting show, right. Well, the last time I checked, the Olympics is a sport. A lot of sporting events. Yeah. People need to just tone it back a little bit. But I really liked Devin Still's speech for accepting the award on behalf of his daughter. So things like that are really good. And it's always good to see Stuart Scott honoured and his mm-hmm. daughter's there representing. So it was a good event.
Yep.
But there's another event going on in Australia, in America right now, which Australia is a part of, and that is the IFAF World Cup. And we're going to speak to Chris Guscott, so we'll get him on the line. All right, we've got him on the line, Chris Guscott. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris_Guscott. That's GUSCOTT. He's the Gridiron Australia team reporter, and he's travelled with the team. He's over in Canton, Ohio. How are you going, Chris?
Very well, thank you, gentlemen. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for asking. more importantly...
no one ever asks.
No one ever cares about us.
Really?
Yeah, it's good, Chris.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, we appreciate your care.
You're already in the good books.
So, the Australian Outback team, before we get into the results in the past week, just run us through, Arthur. You've been there the whole way. The team preparation, the selection process, the training camps... A lot of work went into this. Can you just fill everyone in on the process involved in that?
Gee, yeah, it was. It's been a long process. It probably started around mid-2014. We had a lot of the coaches travel around the country to each individual state. They were going around and picking players that they thought would be good enough for the selection camp. And then everybody came together this past February up on the Gold Coast. We had about 83 guys on the roster, and they had to pick about 45 for the travel squad to meet IFAF regulations. And ever since then, it's been pretty chaotic in terms of all the things we've had to have done. But it's been good for the fellas because this is a really good opportunity for them. I mean, this comes around every 4 years, and the Australian Outback side doesn't really play a whole lot of teams together as a national team. I mean, the last game we played was against Polynesia 2 years ago, and I mean, it's Polynesia, and apparently it was played in monsoonal-like conditions, so it was more of a swimming match than it was gridiron. But it was, in terms of the Outback, them coming together in this process and everybody getting everything organised, it felt more like what a national team should be, and it felt more like what these players deserve, I suppose, in a way. I mean, it's a it's still very much a grassroots sort of sport, but these guys, we have a few guys going over potentially to smaller colleges, and so, I mean, to get these guys, just the feeling of international gridiron and feeling that they are feeling that they're on the right track of sorts and that we can continue to grow the sport is exactly what we were looking for in this, and leading up, that was exactly what they got to feel out of all of it.
That's good to know. And the coaching staff led by John, how do I pronounce his surname? Is it Leighton?
It's Leighton, so Leighton? It's Dutch.
Yeah, Dutch. What's he like, and what's his philosophy as a coach that you've seen or taken away from the tournament?
Well, I mean, he has a ton of coaching experience. I mean, he was coaching in NFL Europe when that was still going. Won a championship with Amsterdam. He brings so much experience, and he demands so much respect. And the players really they gave it to him straight away. And he's one of those people that he walks around. He's very fair, but he's very firm as well. And he gets the most out of the players because he's very technically sound. He's mostly a defensive coach, but he is, yeah, he definitely drills them well, and they all respect him for it. And he's a coach that when he gets off the field, you can definitely have a laugh with him. But yeah, he definitely is adamant, and he's definitely determined to grow gridiron in Australia. Yeah, I mean, all the stuff he does overseas, he refers it back to the gridiron team, and he is always working really hard whenever he's overseas to continue to grow the sport in this profile. And his philosophy, basically, when we got here, was that we're not going to waste the opportunity now we've gotten to it, because it's 4 years in the making, and we've got basically 2 or 3 weeks to put it all together and make it happen. So he's been pretty determined throughout the whole trip, and the guys are really bought into it.
Yeah,
it's good. The location of the World Cup, it got changed, but it ultimately ended up in Canton, Ohio.
Yep.
If most of our listeners will know what Canton's famous for, Woot.
Yep, which is the Hall of Fame.
The Hall of Fame.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Did you happen to get to go there with the team and get to walk around and check out the hall? And if you did, what was your thoughts and takeaways from that?
Yeah, we had the opportunity. We had a tour day on the 4th of July, actually, so we got to have a very American holiday. We trained with the USA team in the morning, and then we went to the Hall of Fame in the afternoon. The players loved it. I mean, the look on the players' face was it was pretty priceless when they walked in. And, I mean, there is a lot to take in when you get there. I mean, initially walking through, you go through all the history, lots of great little just pieces of just souvenirs and little and pieces where you look at and just go, wow, like that was Jerry Rice's gloves or things like that. And I mean, I think looking at the guys and their reaction to the Hall of Fame was just that, you know, these guys are, I mean, especially over in Australia, I mean, you don't really hear too much about, you know, the NFL scene. I mean, it's definitely growing now, and it's fantastic to see the exposure. I mean, even with podcasters like yourself and, you know, and different, you know, maybe even just news showing little highlights at the end of their sports packages. But, I mean, getting these guys there to a place which is just full of folklore was great. Like, the look on their faces was outstanding. And, I mean, going through, especially when they had all the busts, and that's right near the end of the tour, having all the busts of all the famous players' heads in that little hall area. I mean, these guys, they spent a long time in there. We had to force them out. So, I mean, those guys, they absolutely loved the experience. I mean, and personally for myself as well, I mean, I got to look at heaps of players that I loved watching. I mean, Warren Moon was a personal favourite of mine. I mean, he was definitely before my time, but I loved watching him as a quarterback, and then to see some of his gear, to see his bust in the Hall of Fame was just, it was amazing.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've had Adam Gotsis on recently, and we know that he's been helping out. What's he been like around the squad?
Yeah, he's been really pumped up. He looks like one of the guys, because he played with the Outback team in 2011, as probably you would know, and I mean, he knew a lot of the guys coming in, but he looked like a kid again on the sidelines. Like, he looked like he was going out and ready to play. I mean, when we played against France, he was on the sideline, and I mean, he was taking the guys through drills about 45 minutes before kickoff, and you could tell that if you'd handed him a Guernsey, he would have jumped in straight away, regardless of what Georgia Tech or anyone would have told him. and he's been fantastic around the guys. I mean, the defensive line particularly, I mean, when we split off into individuals, to have those guys learning from, I mean, one of the better defensive linemen, I mean, in college. I mean, I'm not sure if that's a realistic thing to say, but he's certainly up there as one of the better players on the defensive line in college. And, I mean, his experience immediately showed to the players. And, I mean, they responded and they listened to every single word they said, as they should. I mean, he was fantastic around the camp. And morale as well, he was fantastic. I mean, we were coming off a massive win, and then for him to come in, he was just a fantastic presence to have around. And I mean, even after training, didn't leave or go off elsewhere and do his own thing. He came back and he hung out with the players, just in the common room areas, and he had meals with the players, etc. So I mean, he was a great mate to them, as well as a great teacher and a great example.
Yeah, well, when we spoke to him a few weeks ago for our Aussies in the NFL special.
Yep.
He spoke very fondly of his time at the World Cup. That Adam Gotsis was, you know, very, very pumped up. You could tell then that he was pumped up about the tournament this year. And I think it's good for the younger player, especially in the team, to see that, look, he was once one of you, and now he is, as you said, one of the better players on the defensive line in the ACC division in college football, and many have him high up in draft boards. We'll move on to the results. Obviously, the first game, which was the tournament's opening game, it was a huge success. After that pick six early on, we had 47 unanswered points,
yep.
47-6. Jared Stegman was just nuts, broke all sorts of records.
Yep.
And you mentioned the rushing defense with Adam Gotsis helping out. They had Korea at minus 21 rushing yards. What was game one like? There was a lot of euphoria back home, a lot of airtime, and a lot of people really excited for Australia.
Yeah, well, I think what credited to that most was that we had no idea what to expect. I mean, we can reveal this now, but we had one YouTube clip of South Korea, and it was from the opposition team's perspective and from a sideline camera that was probably about, you know, 3 pixels. So, I mean, it was a pretty strange experience rocking up to the game. I mean, we thought we'd have a chance, obviously, and we were confident we were going to win. But 47-6 was a real shock. I mean, I was with about a minute left in the first quarter when we were down 6-0. I mean, Stegman thrown 2 picks. I was thinking this could be a really long tournament if we play like this. But it was one of those things where the guys were really nervy, stepped onto the stage and let the moment get better of them. But then once the rushing game started to get going, I mean, we had almost 250 yards on the ground. Once that started to get going, everybody relaxed, and then the class really showed. And unfortunately for a team like South Korea, I mean, they've been around for a long time, but they haven't really progressed a whole lot, and they didn't really have a whole lot to show us. And once we got past that stage, I mean, it was a fantastic feeling. And, I mean, you mentioned the euphoria back home. I mean, people really picked up on it. I mean, we didn't expect at all to have the sort of social media presence that we had for people, like for different news teams and stuff to pick up on it, and for plenty of people to really react to it. And that was a huge boost for the guys as well. I mean, they're such a tight-knit group, but to also have people back home cheering for them as well is a massive commodity for them.
We expect North Korea to have no game tapes, not South Korea.
Yeah, no, it's international gridiron is a strange sport because the amount of games that you play means that the amount of tape that you have is basically non-existent. So you're walking into games blind. It's very strange for the coaches.
Hmm. Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Going from a 47-6 victory, the second game must have been a lot tougher, losing to France. Final score 53-3. So that was
yeah,
France had outscored their opposition by 75 points in 2 games.
Yeah, it was to say this in an honest sense, we expected France to win. I think there weren't, I mean, a lot of guys were extremely optimistic after the game against South Korea, and understandably so, but France is the third best team in Europe. They are a very on-off team, so we knew that if you could hit them hard early, shake their confidence, then we could really have a shot, but it simply didn't happen. I mean, our guys got outclassed by a better team. And I mean, it was apparent early. I mean, they had a running back. I'm not sure if you've seen any of the tape. They have a running back. His name's Yetmo. He looks exactly like Marshawn Lynch and runs exactly like Marshawn Lynch, like runs through players head down, and he's got those dreads that just flow out the back of his helmet. It was kind of fun to watch, but kind of wasn't, because he just destroyed us in the first half. But I mean, I guess the guys, they took a lot out of it, and they weren't too shattered, because just the class difference in the end was kind of one of those things. They just had to shrug and go, yeah. I mean, we got beaten by a better opponent. 50 points hurt. I think we were expecting more of like a maybe 4 touchdowns, which, I mean, it sounds a bit absurd, but we were thinking more in that sort of range would be pretty realistic, and we'd be happy with the performance. But execution was pretty poor in that game, and France made us pay rightfully. And to kind of talk about the social media on the second side, like on the flip side of it, when we lost by that much, we had a lot of people who had just come, like had just started supporting the team after we won 47-6 over South Korea. So they've looked at this result and gone, hang on, what the heck happened there? Like, they got absolutely trounced in this game.
They're not really used to seeing or knowing that France is such a good team. But then France, you know, they wiped the floor with us, to put it as nicely as we can. But then they absolutely got demolished by America, 82-0.
Yeah, so that was sorry to interrupt. That was actually it was a funny story behind that, because we have a very good relation with USA football, and we, like I said, we trained with them on the 4th of July. And ever in all the World Cups we've been to, we've been great friends with the US. We're the only team really willing to talk to them, because US just dominates, obviously. Anyway, so France were just being really cocky. They were trying to fight after plays. One of the players was spitting, and so USA usually takes a little bit of mercy if you play well, like if you play within the rules and you've got morals, I suppose. But France really didn't, and so USA just stomped on their throat, really, to be honest.
I love that in international gridiron that there's a villain, like there's a, and it's France, that those damn Frenchmen.
Exactly. Everybody up in the media box and everybody on the sidelines, we were all having a good laugh. And then once it got past 70 points, we're like, okay, probably should let him go now.
Ease up a little bit. What did the coach say after the game? Because it's tough to come back from a 53-3 loss, but you know they did well and they turned it around. And you had the 16-8 win over Brazil in game 3. Very strong effort defensively from Carlisle Jones, defensive end. So, what did coach say, and what's the morale now heading into our fifth place game against Korea?
Yeah, well, it was interesting because we had a lot of banged up bodies. I mean, this tournament is really grueling for the players, because you've got a game every 3 days, and I mean, in terms of training, it's very, very hard to get in good time to recover, as well as installing game plan for the next game, because you have no real time to focus on either. So, in terms that we dropped a practice on the day after the France game and replaced it with a recovery time. And the players just got a time to relax, stretch out, just to ice the bodies and make sure they were mentally prepared for the game against Brazil. And I think that was probably the best thing that could have happened, because there wasn't really a whole lot John could have said about it. Because, I mean, personally, the ties for him, it hurt him personally as well, because the head coach of France, he coached against an NFL Europe, and there's this little rivalry there. They're acquaintances, to say the least, but there's a little bit of a rivalry there. So him losing to that as well, it hurt him. But he did pretty well in the end to kind of go, look, execution wasn't great in that game. We knew France was the better team. Let's just put it behind us now and focus on Brazil. And the guys responded really well to that. And then, like you said, coming into Brazil game, we didn't really know what to expect out of them, because Brazil was sort of the midway point between what we'd seen in terms of competition, because Brazil had beaten South Korea by about 4 touchdowns a game before. And then to come in, we jumped out of the blocks, and then, to be honest, personally, from where I was sitting, Brazil won 3/4 of that game. They tried and tried and tried, but they just ran into roadblocks just outside the red zone. And I mean, the Australian defense was fantastic. I mean, like you said, we had Carlisle Jones was fantastic in the first half. He had 3 tackles for loss, I think, in the first quarter and a half. Was dominant off the edge. And I mean, our defensive line has been really good all tournament, personally. But yeah, our secondary as well was able to pitch in and make sure we stopped any of the passing efforts. But yeah, Brazil really got going. I think this was a good sign of resilience from our defense, at least, because there were I mean, there were lots of times we could have caved, lots of times we could have given up really big plays, and we could have even lost that game and been sitting our final round. So, I mean, it was a good sign from Australia to show that defensively that they were ready to stand up when the offence really dried up.
Josh. Wyatt and I were talking before you came on about how do they even select the American team? Because that's, we were thinking about if they could pick any player they want, they'd be...
That'd be first quarter sort of scores. It's a strange system for them. I mean, they have to have really strict rules of eligibility. I mean, this year they say this is the best team they've ever picked, and everybody went, "Oh, great." But the Americans, most of the roster is Div 1 players. I mean, one of the running backs who destroyed France, he was a former Iowa State product. I mean, you've got players from Mississippi State, off the top of my head, Texas Tech, Boise State, players who came out of that system and weren't good enough to make an NFL roster or kind of fell through the cracks a little bit and just kind of faded away. This is an audition tape for those sort of players. And so they come into this and it gives them incentive instead of just kind of picking a bunch of random guys out of... there are a few... Div 3 players on the roster, and one of them's Kevin Burke, who's a quarterback. He 2-time Division 3 Player of the Year, and he is untouchable. And it just shows there is just such an incredible talent difference because, I mean, obviously this is America's sport, and so these kids play it since they're 4 or 5, and it's just so natural to them. And then all these players coming in, you know, a lot of our players on our team have only really been playing for maybe 4 or 5 years. And they come into the national team and they're playing against guys who just, it's their sixth sense to do whatever they need to do on the field. If the USA was to pick the players that they could possibly pick, it'd be more of a demolition job than what it already is. So, I mean, I think it's good they pick players that are kind of on the fringe or have just recently come out of college, and it gives them a run and it at least gives like a glimmer of hope to the better teams.
That's true. And speaking of them, they play Japan in the gold medal match. So we'll just get your prediction on who's going to win the whole thing before we let you go.
It seems fairly obvious. I mean, the USA played Japan in the first game and they won 43-18. Japan are a brilliant team. They won the tournaments before USA actually came in. Japan's always been a powerhouse, and for them to not even come close to US just kind of says where it's at. USA beat Canada 50-7 in the last World Championship final, and I'm actually going to call the same score again. So 50-7 for USA.
All right, there you go, folks. If you want to put some money on it, 50-7.
Can you?
I don't know. I hope so. I'll do it.
Yeah, no, I think it'd be pretty. The betting markets would be a little uneven. The USA would be $1.01 every single game.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be worth it. Yeah.
No.
Perfect. All right. Actually, one last question before we let go. How would you sum up the whole entire experience in the tournament in one or two words for Australia?
It's been fantastic. Can't really use too many more words than that. It's been pretty awe-inspiring.
Yeah, all right. Awe-inspiring. I like that. And I think that's good. And I'll add in that I think it's been progressive in terms of getting more people excited about Australian gridiron and American football down here. So I think it's all good news coming back in terms of all of our local comps and the amount of participation we get moving forward as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see where we're at in 10 years or so.
Yeah, we'll be looking back at this thinking, man, can't believe that not many people played this game, but I expect it to grow crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so do I.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for joining us, Chris. Really appreciate it. Safe trip back for whenever you do return, and enjoy the fifth place game tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah, it'd be tomorrow morning for us. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you very much, fellas. Appreciate your time.
No worries. Thanks,
Chris.
All right, now we've got some NFL news. After speaking to Chris, that was good.
Yeah. Chris is a lovely man.
Too nice. Really nice guy. As soon as he hung up, we was like, that guy was incredibly nice. All our guests have been pretty nice. We haven't had any rude guests. Except maybe Matt Bungard occasionally can be a bit rude.
I think that's
that's a test to see if you still listen to this program. All right, big signing days during the week. I'll rattle through the deals and we'll talk about the numbers, but we're not really too concerned about the numbers or takeaways too much. But basically, Broncos signed wide receiver Demaryius Thomas to a 5-year, $70 million deal, including $43.5 million guaranteed. And Dez Bryant also signed a 5-year, $70 million contract, including $45 million guaranteed. And then we had the Chiefs signing Justin Houston to a 6-year, $101 million contract with a whopping $52.5 million guaranteed and a $20.5 million signing bonus. That's the second largest deal for a defensive player in NFL history behind Ndamukong Suh. And then Steven Gostkowski is now the highest paid kicker in the NFL. He signed a 4-year deal worth $17.2 million, including a $6 million signing bonus.
That's crazy.
So a lot of spent on deadline day. Very interesting to take that away, especially that Demaryius and Dez got
nearly identical contracts. You knew Dez had to get that a little bit more just because it's Dez, just because his persona. Yeah.
If you had to choose one to sign over the other,
you'd pick Dez.
I'd pick Dez.
Yeah.
Look, I really like Demaryius Thomas's skill set, but I love Dez's sort of attitude on the field because he's very aggressive and he's a ball hawk. Demaryius Thomas, man, if he had Steve Smith like grit and like I want it, I think he would be a much better player. Which I think we've seen though. He came out this morning and says I want that. He wants the receiving record. Yeah. So he's a little bit more aggressive now. I think with that money behind him, he's got a little bit of swag, a bit of a money bag chip on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see how we go. But look, do you have any problems with the money or the deal?
Money's constantly changing. So, I mean,
the cap's always going up.
I know, I just look at it and just think,
yeah.
Amazing how much money's involved. But yeah, that's pretty much my only take on it.
And people argue, should this person get more or should Julio Jones get more money? Should such and such get more money? I don't care. The issue is, for me, do they get re-signed? People ask me about T.Y. Hilton or how much money he's going to get. I don't care as long as he is a Colt. Like, doesn't bother me. As long as we re-sign him or that person stays with their team, I want Julio to stay with the Falcons. I want Hilton to stay with the Colts.
Except, all right, so then say they re-sign Hilton tomorrow for the same money as Dez, then you'd be annoyed, right? No?
No, because when you look at the amount of money that wide receivers also got, like Mike Wallace back a couple of years ago got $12 million a year, which was considered crazy, and it still is a crazy amount for him.
Yeah.
But when you look at $14 million a year for Demaryius and Dez, when the cap's about to go up, when you got players like Mike Wallace on $12 million, Vincent Jackson on $11 million, like, for me, that's fine. Like, it's not Calvin money. I think, if they got Calvin money, I probably wouldn't care. Like, I wouldn't argue. That's fine. Like, they're in that same tier, but... Yeah, T.Y. Hilton's probably that tier below, but if he wants that amount of money and that's what it takes to keep him, you got to look at the alternative. The Colts are in a good position that the alternative's okay, but look at the Cowboys. I mean, if they let Dez go, you're lining Terrence Williams and Cole Beasley up.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah. The Justin Houston deal, though, was amazing.
They'll sew Chiefs.
Yeah.
They sign a $101 million deal, like a huge amount of money, and it just doesn't even factor in on anyone's news headline because everyone's focused about Dez, Demaryius, and Jerry Jones carrying on.
Yeah. If you had to pick, though, would you pick Houston or what? You'd pick what, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
It's just, wow, so much money.
But what didn't care, like, what doesn't care about money? That's why, like, you remember when he signed his deal and he said, he was like, what do rich people do?
Yeah.
Like, what do I have? I had to Google how to spend money or what do rich people buy?
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think what cares that such and such got more than him or such. He just doesn't care.
No, I just think it's good for the Texans when you, like,
Well, it's good for the Texans, but then the Texans still don't have a quarterback, so.
True.
It's not good. But.
Yeah, they might have to put what there. Do it all anyway.
Watt's too busy taking photos with Jennifer Aniston during the week.
His celebrity crushes, he's trying to. I don't know if he has, like, a celebrity bucket list or something that he has to try to
get. Jennifer Aniston should be on most
bucket lists.
Wow. What, you don't reckon?
No, just I'm just staying out.
Look, I knew after 61 episodes, eventually we'd have the penultimate Jennifer Aniston debate, but for me, she's fine wine, baby. She's getting better with age.
Really? She's getting better?
She is, man. Seriously?
Okay.
You watch her in Friends, and then you watch her now, and you're like, yeah, it's the same old. Like, she looks...
So it's the same, or is she getting better?
You're supposed to get worse when you age, right? So, okay. You know, by not getting worse, you're getting better.
Fair enough. What money can buy, huh?
I sound like Trent Dilfer then. Anyway, yeah, so that was so Chiefs, just huge deal. But look, outside of Houston, they had what, like 4 or 5, 6, 7 sacks in the season with Harley and D Ford? Yeah. Yeah, so, and maybe Dontari Poe would have 1 or 2 in there as well, but yeah.
It's amazing to see how far Justin Houston's come since he failed the drug test before, like the combine, his year and things like that. That's just, people had him as going as possibly a top 10 talent, and then he slid to the third round and things like that.
I kind of want him to break Strahan's sack record.
So do I, because Strahan's isn't the record. I mean,
because he had
there's
half.
So much debate, yeah, and like I do not have an opinion on that.
Yeah.
But I'd rather there be someone who's leading it that is. There's no debate about
it. Yeah, for me, and that way it can just be done with. And Houston's such a hard worker, such a relentless guy, that such a good guy. Like, apart from, you know, his troubles before Combine, you don't hear anything bad about him. I don't know if it's because the Chiefs has never written, there's no stories.
The
there's never anything about
the
Chiefs. The
only thing ever you hear about the Chiefs is that their stadium battle with Seattle. Yeah. Which they lost, didn't they?
I don't know. Yeah, that's the most stories last year written on the Chiefs were break record, lost record, broke record, lost record.
And how they can't throw wide receivers.
Yes. Josh, did you know that the Chiefs didn't have a touchdown pass to a wide receiver last year?
Wow, amazing, really?
Yeah. All right, another deal that sort of slid under the radar was the Steelers signed defensive end Cameron Hayward to a 6-year, $59.2 million deal. Yeah, he was the 31st overall pick in the 2011 draft. He had a good year in 2014. He finished 6th amongst all 3-4 defensive ends on Pro Football Focus behind who we just talked about, J.J. Watt, Muhammad Wilkinson, Sheldon Richardson, Calais Campbell, and Fletcher Cox. He finished with a plus 24.6 grading, very good against the rush and solid against the run. So I think when you look at that Steelers defense, they had to re-sign him because... without Palomalu there, can you think of any real superstars there that are striking fear into you? Like the old Steelers curtain used to. Ryan Shazier, who was injured. Arthur Motes, Jarvis Jones, Bud Dupree.
Shazier might come on, but at the moment, no.
No, and their defense... The defense is going to be very average this year. I can easily see Big Ben throwing like 5,000 yards.
That would be a good betting.
Yeah. I wonder if there is.
All the markets for the betting, if there's 5,000...
over or under?
Yeah.
I'll take the over.
No, I'm saying I can't wait to put money on it.
You're just looking at game flow and things like that. We're going to talk about that when we do our fantasy mailbag. Game flow is so important and... When you look at the Steelers' defense without it, Big Ben and Tonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, they're going to have, and Le'Veon Bell, they're going to have a big, big year in terms of mass production. All right,
I'm excited about Bryant.
Yeah, I really like Martavis Bryant this year.
Last year, I just thought, because I was high on Marcus Wheaton.
Yes,
and then
so was everyone. But look, he might be better suited in the slot. But then you've got Sammy Coates there as well, who
they're very high on also.
Yeah, and he's showed flashes and he's such a physical specimen, but, you know, we'll wait and see how he goes. But we've got all month to talk fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Sigmund Bloom, who will be coming on the show in a couple of weeks, who we are really, really excited about, is a Steelers fan. So he'll have a lot to say about his mighty Steelers. All right, former Patriots guard Dan Connolly's decided to retire. Basically, he's worried about his long-term health because he's had some concussion issues, and he's got 3 daughters under the age of 6. So he's going to retire and be more of a family man. He suffered 4 concussions in the NFL that were documented. So won a Super Bowl finally with the Patriots after not being there early on when they won their other titles. But remember his 71-yard kickoff return versus the Packers in 2010?
Wow.
Tackled at the 4-yard line.
That would be devastating. Wouldn't it crush you inside to, like, even though you'd ran 71 yards, and that's an amazing feat in itself, but to fall 4 yards short.
Man, I listened to the audio. Chris Collinsworth, I've never heard him so excited in any commentary.
He's still my favourite.
I know he's your favourite, but, like, it, actually listening back to him get so excited, he was like, oh, man, it was like a kid at Christmas. Finding like a big box of candy or something like that, he was going nuts. But yes, good career for Dan Colony, solid guy. Just went in and did his job, and Super Bowl champion. Yeah, so no. We wish him all the best. Brandon Marshall's hosted an impromptu Twitter Q&A yesterday. Did you see any of that?
I did, and I was reading up on this. I find, yeah. This is a Brandon Marshall thing. I kind of think he has the same kind of mentality as Marshall and Lynch, and the fact that he can just, you know, end at any time.
He's proven himself.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't care. So basically, if you're wondering what we're talking about, he said that if he gets cut tomorrow, I'll retire. After the Jets, I'm done. This is my last team. So he's 31, so we'll wait and see. What
31, you know, isn't extremely old, because, you know, you look at Steve Smith, he's still going. Except
I love Steve Smith. And we'll talk about old receivers next when we talk about Reggie Wayne. But he also mentioned, he got asked who's the best quarterback he played with, and he said Kyle Orton, which for me sounds like he's just a bitter, scorned lover. Like, Jay Cutler's the recent beau, and he's broken up, and he doesn't want to say the recent ex-girlfriend. Mm-hmm. But honestly, you can't pick Kyle Orton over Jay Cutler, surely. Who's he fooling?
I thought he was sincere. Nah. Yeah, no, that's quite clearly, I don't know, it's tough. You don't know what he's honestly thinking, but I doubt it.
You doubt it?
I highly doubt it.
Are you still a Cutler believer?
Believer? Yeah. I wouldn't say a believer, but I don't hate on him as much as everyone else does.
Yeah, I feel like I'm an honorary Bears fan recently, because I always feel like I've got to go to task over Cutler and just defend the guy a little bit. Because,
there's so many quarterbacks, you'd rather have him than over them.
There is a lot of quarterbacks, but, like, if you're not, like, if you've got Cutler, you at least know what you're going to get. And for me, like, so much of last year was how bad their defense was.
You got to be kidding me. I mean, how do you watch them? I mean, yeah. They stink!
Free agent wide receiver Reggie Wayne said that teams have been calling and he has plans to play this season. If you watched him last year, he did not look right. Wasn't washed up would be the word. I hate saying that about Reggie, but that's what it was. He had a 58.2% catch rate despite running high percentage routes in the league's most prolific passing offense outside of Green Bay. So he is turning 37, so when you think of when we just mentioned Brandon Marshall being 31, Reggie Wayne is, you know, turning 37. He said torn ACL and torn triceps and an off-season knee scope. So what do you think? Should he just retire?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I don't really want to see him in another
jersey. I think you don't, even though it'd be good to have him as a mentor around, you don't want to waste a roster spot on having someone that you have no intention of having on your team.
Nah,
I don't think he could make a valuable contribution to any of the 32 teams at all.
Yeah. Yep. Not that I would.
Do you think he could separate against any of the cornerbacks?
Look, I haven't seen him run, but I can't.
No?
Maybe against Bradley Fletcher.
And it's not like he has some amazing leaping ability to.
No. When all you've, same with Victor Cruz, who we'll talk about I'm sure, once training camp rolls along, when you've made a career out of supreme route running and great hands, when you've had torn triceps and knee injuries and you can't use your route running and your hands to separate anymore, it is tough. You don't have anything else you can rely on, such as a big frame or a high catch radius. So it is tough, but I'm not going to get mad if Reggie puts on another team's colours, because, you know, he's done enough in his career for me to never hate him. But I mean, I would love to see him stay one man.
He got the key to the city?
He did.
Yeah. So there you go. That's all you need. That's all you need.
That's the pinnacle, mate. He's going to the Hall of Fame, so it doesn't even matter.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, last little bit of news before we hit the weird web story. The Bills have placed offensive line coach Aaron Cromer on paid administrative leave, which may become, you know, indefinite leave without pay, depending on the results of the findings in the court and in the investigation. But Cromer is accused of assaulting a teenager under the age of 18 over a beach chair. So there's the rumors are that
if found guilty, this is a lunatic thing to do.
Apparently he's a bit of a lunatic. Remember, he had a lot of run-ins with Jay Cutler last year.
So does everyone, apparently.
And he was the one that released bad stuff about Jay Cutler's attitude to the press and things like that. So, yeah, well, Jay Cutler cops it off everybody.
Yeah, everyone's got a beef with Jay.
Not
Jay,
us.
Jay Cutty.
If Jay wants to come in and speak to us, you'll get nothing but roses from us, Jay.
Yeah.
And we won't even ask about Kristen. Even though, you know, we were Laguna Beach fans back in the day and the Hills.
I really like when Jay Cutler was on the league.
Yes, the Cutlet. Yeah,
Cutlets.
Yes. So, Aaron Cromer, what do you think? What are your thoughts on the Bills' offensive line?
Without him?
Without him. He's a decent offensive line coach. One of the better offensive line coach in the league.
I mean,
they need all the help they can get.
It spells bad news for McCoy.
Yes.
So they're already shaky with players, and now Aaron Cromer's, you know,
more like Shaky McCoy.
Wow, yeah. Shaky McCoy.
You like that?
I do like that.
Yeah.
So. At first, I thought no. Second,
not bad.
Pretty good.
One of my better puns.
Yeah.
I'm happy with that. I'm happy with that. All right, it's time for the weird web story.
You gotta get out of here. This is crazy. You're so weird.
No. You're really weird.
This is weird.
This is weird. Marshawn Lynch.
Did I stutter?
Keeps chicken wings in his socks. John Boyle of Seahawks.com, who was attending Lynch's charity work in Oakland, said, and I quote, "At one point, Lynch is delivered some chicken wings on the field, and he stuffs a few extras in his socks." Yes, you read that right. For a few minutes, this millionaire Pro Bowl running back was coaching football on a warm July afternoon with chicken wings in his socks, which he later removed and ate. Firstly, original thoughts on that? I'm trying to think whether they're just normal chicken wings or, like, you're talking like one, like...
I'm pretty sure they're...
Like ones with sauce, like you get at, like, Hooters
or whatever. I'm not sure about how much sauce was on them, but if there was sauce, that's disgusting.
That's disgusting.
But, yeah, I'm pretty sure they would have just been, you know, barbecued wings and just stuffed them down his socks. Yeah. I also watched a video of Marshawn Lynch playing kickball this week. Did you watch this?
No.
He was playing kickball, I'm pretty sure it was on the 4th of July
weekend.
And do you know kickball? It's like baseball. Yeah. He has a boot on him as well.
Really?
He was killing this thing.
I love Lynch so much.
He was kicking it a mile.
Yeah, I think if I get Lynch in one of my fantasy teams this year, I think I may buy a Lynch jersey. He's such an entertaining guy. I'm going to miss him, like, when he leaves, because he's produced so
much. We'll miss an athlete, but his actual attitude, not.
Oh, and entertainment value, everything. The Skittles thing. I really wish his movie got made.
That would have been interesting to see.
Yeah. But have you ever stored food on yourself, you know, in a strange spot, like, besides a pocket or anything like that? Or even pocket, like... Have you ever put, like, a weird food in your pocket somewhere accidentally? Like, been out and put food? Like, I don't know, if you're at an event?
No, I sometimes find, you know, just a packet of chewing gum in a jagged pocket. Mm. Or I found, actually, a small packet of shapes in a jacket, in my jacket yesterday. You want to get... I've got a story that I can use.
Let's do it.
When I worked at my former job... at a supermarket that will remain nameless, but the prices are down and staying down. there was a man who would come in and frequently shoplift.
Oh, really?
But we couldn't catch him because there wasn't a camera in the aisle that he would steal things from.
Yeah.
And he would constantly go to the... where you would get your frozen meals and your frozen chicken and things like that, and he would constantly open boxes of salmon. and stuff salmon down his pockets and pants and up his pant legs and in his jackets and things. And we would watch him on the camera walk out, and you could tell he definitely had things stuffed up his sleeves and things. But when confronted him, you know, we can't ask to check him or search him or anything like that. So we just had to watch him walk away with crumbed salmon and frozen salmon and things like that in his pockets. He must have stunk. But, yeah.
Oh, it's good to see Mr. Jameis Winston's father down in Australia. Yes, taking salmon to match his son's crab legs.
Yeah, there you go.
Man, did you have a nickname for this guy?
No.
I would have just called him Mr. Sal.
Mr.
Salmon.
No. You lost it. No. Yeah, and Shaky McCoy?
Yes, I know. I've got a story. It's not on my person, but we're at an event, and I must have... My girlfriend and I were in a group, we were talking, and then when we got home, and she said, oh, can you get my phone out of my bag? I opened her bag. She has quite a big bag. There was a quiche in there, a mini quiche. I must have dropped it, or she's dropped it, or something's fallen off a table into her bag.
Maybe she was doing mini sneaky quiche once and went, oh, I don't want to look like a pig.
Yeah,
and
but then... just one. It wasn't a whole stockpile, just one quiche. Yeah.
By the way, do you like quiche?
No, I don't like it. Otherwise, I'd contemplating eating it, but I did it.
Guys, quiche, no good.
No good.
No good.
Yes. Root and Y, anti-quiche.
Anti-quiche and frittata.
And frittata.
Which is pretty much quiche.
Yeah, and it's fritters.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Corn fritters.
What is a corn fritter?
Girlfriend gets them when we go out for breakfast at the arts cafe. Great. They do great.
Yeah.
Like bacon, eggs, and everything. They do like... sort of alternative quinoa and all that sort of stuff.
Quinoa?
Quinoa, quinoa. I call it quinoa.
Let's have a debate. Who calls it quinoa and who calls it quinoa? I don't even eat this
stuff. I don't know. It tastes like sand to me. But Emma gets these corn fritters all the time. I don't even know what corn fritters are, but
right.
Yeah, they don't look good. But anyway, we should note before we move on that Lynch's charity camp, which, you know, we all talk about Lynch's attitude with the media and his personality, but he does a lot of good stuff. So he gave away 400 pairs of shoes to kids in need. The camp handles 1,100 kids in total. A lot of them are troubled youth in Oakland and at juvie centres and things like that. So he put the wings in his socks. That's how dedicated he is. He's like, no, I've got to keep coaching these kids. I'll eat sweaty, disgusting wings later. It's only my own sweat. Sweat on chicken wings. Ugh.
Oh,
coming soon to a KFC near you.
Anything to keep him happy.
Yes. All right, it's time for...
You got mail. You got mail. You got mail. You got mail. Goodbye.
All right, so we've got some mailbag questions, but the first one's not really a mailbag question. It's a table that was produced by Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus this week, and it looked at the difference in quarterback rating from pressure, and it was funny where some of the takeaways from that is Ben Roethlisberger had a quarterback rating of 98 with no pressure and 112 with pressure. So he had a differential of plus 13.5, but you look at someone like Drew Brees had, you know, the other way around, 112 with no pressure and 60.5 with pressure. Differential of 51.7. Someone like Tom Brady had a differential of 57.2. Joe Flacco, 47.3. Most had negatives.
I love it. If you give Charlie Whitehurst a bit of time, the guy can make plays.
Yeah, 112 passer rating without no pressure. What were your thoughts on that list? I know many pointed out to us how they wanted to know what was conducted to work it out. But for me, as a general guide, obviously... For me, you look at Ben Roethlisberger and Jay Cutler, and I think the importance of a pass-catching back when plays get tough, when you can sling a ball out to Le'Veon Bell or Matt Forte, like for Jay Cutler, who finished second on that list.
Yeah.
Hugely important, I think, in that regard.
It's a difficult table to kind of like put your head around because like I feel like, yes, that's a big factor, having a pass catching back. You can just, you know, flick it out the side and Forte or Le'Veon Bell could have caught it.
Yeah, that's right.
Or
Andre Ellington.
However, when you look at it, Jay Cutler wasn't the safest with the ball either.
No.
So he was more willing to risk it and throw it up to Jeffrey and Marshall last year.
Yeah, that's right.
So it shows you that, like, maybe they're not the same. And I know that Roethlisberger, like, he can extend play, so he's kind of an exception. He's just like, he deserves to be at the top because he's that's
built
how,
like an actual clock tower.
Exactly. So he makes plays like that, but he also, instead of throwing the ball away, he might just go, you know what, Antonio Brown can outrun this guy.
Yeah,
I might have a go. See, where when you look down the bottom, you've got like players like Drew Brees and Tom Brady who would just get rid of the ball.
Yeah,
so I mean,
yeah, and I always think as well, players that have such a high quarterback rating when there's no pressure, like look at Aaron Rodgers, has 115 passer rating, 89 passer rating with no pressure is not bad, but there's still a 25 differential because he's so good without pressure. Same with Peyton Manning, same with Tom Brady and Drew Brees down the bottom. You such a big drop-off. So, you know, someone like Manning's going from 104 to 80, and Rodgers is going from 115 to 89. So there's such a big drop-off between the two. But it is interesting to see, and it definitely created some actual football talk during the week from our listeners, which was really good. Another table which we tweeted out, and it was the top 20 most targeted players from 2014. So top of the list was Demaryius Thomas with 184, Antonio Brown 181, Julio Jones 163, all the way down to Martellus Bennett, 20th in the NFL in targets at 128 targets.
That's interesting.
That's crazy. And Rob Gronkowski's there at 15th at 131. Odell Beckham at 17 in only 12 games at 130 targets. Based on that, who's your favorite to top the league in targets for this season? We asked a lot of people during the week. We got some answers, a lot of Odell Beckhams, a lot of Antonio Browns.
I feel if Jeffrey played all the games, he could well and truly be the number one target.
Who?
Alshon Jeffrey.
Alshon Jeffrey. He did play 16 games last year.
Did he? Yes. He played all the games.
But there was a couple of games he was used as like a decoy.
Yeah, I really, because I was a fantasy owner.
Yeah.
And I feel that there was a couple of zero games.
There was a couple of games where he didn't play to his ability.
However, Marshall's not there anymore.
I think if Julio Jones as well played, I think he could very easily lead the league in targets.
So can Antonio Brown.
Yes. Yeah. But we need to, if we have to lock in one answer, so if I ask you right now, who will lead the league in targets in 2015?
Give me
one answer and one Smokey.
I'm
going Julio Jones, and I think DeAndre Hopkins could easily lead the league in targets this year.
I'll say Antonio Brown.
Okay.
It's not really a Smokey.
Going safe.
I still think, he'll be up there. Well, I think Broncos will go more run heavy.
Yep. Yeah, I think that I'm turning Demaryius back a little bit.
Yep.
And we mentioned before, Antonio, we're taking the overs on Ben with 5,000 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Smokey, I'll go Randall Cobb.
Randall Cobb, if Jordy Nelson's hip isn't all there.
See.
That could be interesting. All right, so we'll keep an eye on that. But for me, a fantasy takeaway is someone like Martellus Bennett's going high in drafts, like as a tight end. He is not going to get 128 targets again.
Guys, calm down.
You know what I mean? Like, you got to think of the sample chill on size. Bennett. Yeah, just chill.
Just chill.
Just chill. All right, anyway, let's...
I still, I'm high on Eifert. Go get Eifert.
Yeah.
I really
am. I like Eifert. Yeah. The Eifert Tower.
Eifert Tower.
Come on, that's good. That was good. All right, question from @Sportrepreneur. He wants to know, provided you draft DeMarco Murray, how high would you grab Matthews to handcuff him?
See, this is difficult. Last season I had McCoy.
Yep.
I didn't handcuff him with Sproles.
Yep.
It's just a thing. I feel like a handcuff player has to be between rounds, say, 10 to 13,
yep,
where I think Matthews is going to go far higher.
Yeah, if you draft DeMarco Murray and you draft Ryan Matthews, you could easily play Ryan Matthews as your flex and DeMarco Murray as your RB1.
But see, that's a thing. I'm just not sure. He's currently ranked on Fantasy Pros as the 38th running back.
Yep, okay.
So, that's actually not a bad spot. It's not too bad. I don't know what round? Far out.
It's tough. It's in a redraft league, it's tough, but for me, I like Ryan Matthews this year because if DeMarco does go down, which isn't, guaranteed because the injury-prone label is a bit annoying,
mm-hmm,
but Ryan Matthews becomes a running back one immediately. He's a talented running back when he's healthy, Ryan Matthews. So, look, I like him as a flex play this year just because you know they're going to split carries, and you know Chip, we've seen it in tape on Oregon. He loves having multiple backs in the backfield. Yeah, I like Ryan Matthews this year. So Matt,
by the way, one place ahead of him, Bishop Sankey.
What, on Fantasy Pros?
Yeah.
Really?
Who do you take?
I'd take Ryan Matthews over Bishop Sankey easily.
Every day of the week.
Easily. He also wanted to know, likewise, with how high would you handcuff D'Angelo Williams with Le'Veon Bell? See, this one's a bit different because Bell's out 3 weeks.
I don't like it. I don't feel that they're going to just use D'Angelo Williams in the same way they would Le'Veon Bell.
No, but you're getting replacement level running back for 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly, but then...
I wouldn't keep D'Angelo Williams on my roster.
No, I just wouldn't
in
do
a
redraft. No.
Unless you've got a deep roster, I wouldn't after the first 3 weeks.
If you can
pick
him up in the last two rounds, that's when I pick him up. But you couldn't. Yeah. No, he's not going to go that late, and I just feel that you're wasting a spot on
him. You get three games out of him, and then he's pretty much fodder after that. Unless you're willing to hang on to him as an insurance, but you're missing out on potential waiver wire gems.
I will be honest, I am avoiding that situation entirely.
Mm. All right. Question from at OzSportsFan1. Which second-year wide receiver has a monster year and which suffers a slump?
Jordan Matthews.
Monster year?
Monster year.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah?
Yep.
Slump.
I think Brandon Cooks might have a monster year as well if he can stay healthy throughout 16 games, but I still think he's going a little bit overdrafted for me.
Yeah, me too, a little bit.
Just a little bit. For me, a slump. Kelvin Benjamin scares the hell out of me, and Sammy Watkins because that quarterback situation is just ugly.
Yep, I agree with those.
Yep,
so we need like a little agreeance. Noise.
Ding, like a ding ding. We got anything? On the soundboard we're looking at here? No. We only got this.
That's not
gonna work. I also like Allen Robinson as a second-year wide receiver. I think it's going to... I wouldn't say monster year, but for a Jacksonville Jaguar, the definition of a monster year is a little bit different to other teams, other franchises.
Yeah.
He also asked, who do you think will be the most overdrafted and underdrafted players this year? This is in redraft leagues, obviously. Overdrafted, I think LeSean McCoy is being... So overdrafted. And Kelvin Benjamin.
I feel Jimmy Graham is going overdrafted. I think he's not going to put up the kind of production people want. I still think he's going to put up, obviously, high-end tight end numbers.
Yeah.
But where he's being drafted, no.
Yeah, when I look at the tight ends, it's Gronkowski and then everyone else. So I'm not touching tight end. If I'm not drafting Gronk in the first round, I'm not touching tight end until a little bit later on, which is... Brings us to our next question. How high do you take Gronk? That's from at Luke Charles.
Back end of round one? Yeah. I have no problem with that.
Yeah. When your top tier running backs are going off the board, it's basically personal preference. Do you want Gronk? Do you want Antonio Brown? Do you want DeMarco Murray? What do you prefer?
If you feel like you've got, if you in your mind are feeling confident on a later wide receiver who you think could possibly be a wide receiver one come end of the year.
Yeah.
No problem taking a stab and then picking up a running back in round two.
Yeah. And look, after you take Gronk, that's it. You don't have to worry about tight end again. You just take Gronk and that's it. You worry about filling in a replacement during his bye week.
I love the yo-yo that Gronk has been over the last, say, four seasons. It's 1 year, he's round one. Next year, he's round four.
Yeah, because of his injuries.
Injuries, and you're like, And that's not to say that that's not going to happen this year. No. I can comfortably say that I will not be taking him in round one. I just don't like it. I don't
like taking a tight end in round one.
I did a mock draft the other day with that, and I didn't like my team at the end.
No, I do that too, but then you hear, like, players, fantasy legends like Sigmund Bloom and Rumford Johnny, Evan Silver, talk about Gronk. Because of such the point of differential it gives you, it is crazy. We didn't go through underdrafted players in terms of Old Sport One's question. Who you think's underdrafted?
Underdrafted.
I think Chris Ivory's going underdrafted at the moment.
I just picked him up in the NFL.
Yeah, you did. And it was like, if you showed people where you got Chris Ivory in that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Stephen Ridley's not healthy. A guy called Bilal Powell. So Chris Ivory is the guy. You know they're gonna run the ball to help relieve Geno. I think Chris Ivory at the moment is a solid running back too, and he's going far, far too late. Another underdrafted player I think is Eddie Royal. John Fox, I said it last week, trusts his veterans.
I do like where you can get Steve Smith too. We were just talking about how many targets he received last year, I think.
Yep.
People are just thinking Perriman's going to come in and just take over. No,
Steve Smith's not going to let that happen. He's a rabid dog, man, junkyard dog. 134 targets last year, caught 79 of them, so not too bad at all. Also from that list, I'm just looking again, 71.3 catch percentage on Antonio Brown and 181 targets. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is so incredible.
If you want a wide receiver and you're contemplating taking, say the top 5-6 running backs are gone.
Yeah.
Have no problem going
straight. I'll take Antonio Brown at 6 in a draft. I did a mock draft the other day and I liked my team coming out of it.
Yeah.
I was really strong at wide receiver. And especially if you're playing a PPR league, like if you're really strong at wide receiver, you have three really good wide receivers, you're going to win most of your weeks. You just need a fluky touchdown from a running back here or there to sort of bump your score up. Another question, seems to be a player that a lot of people are confused about. We get a lot of questions about Latavius Murray at Ben Hopkins. He's in our MFL team, wants to explain why everyone loves Latavius Murray. We don't.
I
don't know where everyone's coming from, but we don't.
Yeah, no, we've said it before. I especially do not like running backs on teams that are just not very offensive-minded or successful. Just in general, they end up throwing the ball far too much, and we don't really know Latavius as a pass-catching running back, even though he probably could.
We love the talent. He's a great player. Showed glimpses, I know, and Ben said it, he only showed glimpses in one game, but... you know, the talent's been there, but in fantasy, it's not just taking the best players. It's not taking the best players. I'm not building an NFL team. It's game flow and situation. And for me, game flow, especially with Carlos Hyde, Laurie mentioned this last week. You look at Oakland's schedule. How many games are they going to be running out the clock in? How many games are they going to be pounding it deep into the fourth quarter? They're going to be throwing the ball to Amari Cooper. With Derek Carr and Michael Crabtree there as well.
And they didn't bring Roy Helu in for no reason.
No, he another underdrafted player, I think, is good. One last question from at Adam Megabyte. He wants to know how confident we are about our own teams, the Colts, for myself and Philly, for you, you know, at this point in the season.
Wow.
Yeah, very early to decide that, but...
I don't know who's quarterback yet. Sam Bradford should be quarterback, but during this little break, Sanchez is holding his own little get-together with some of the boys like Zach Ertz and things like that.
Yep.
So I'm not sure if he's trying to get chemistry with those players and, you know, I don't know, maybe spread some...
Nah.
Have the players spread some love about him, or I don't know.
They just all live out that way, isn't that how it normally works?
Yeah, I think so, but yeah. I mean, it looks good for Sanchez doing that. I do like Philly's chances.
You have the best looking quarterback competition. Like Sanchez. Sam Bradford's not a bad looking dude. No. Tim Tebow's not a bad looking dude. Matt Barkley. It's plenty of good looking quarterbacks.
So if you're after a good looking quarterback
kind of Philly. You want a good looking quarterback competition. No wonder the ladies. No wonder Colleen likes Philly. No wonder Colleen Wolf's high on Philly. She loves the quarterback battles. But for me, the Colts, a lot of Super Bowl talk from analysts and fans already in July and June. Please stop. Settle down.
Yeah.
Settle. Just chill. Please.
How do you like your defense this year?
Yeah, that's my reaction. I love Vontae Davis, the addition of Henry Anderson, but we'll wait and see. Look, I'm really excited to watch our offense.
And I'm, even though... Philly has so many new pieces that it's hard to say how I think we're going to go because we haven't seen any of them.
Exactly. We haven't even put helmets or pads on.
Don't know who a safety is. Don't know who our quarterback is. Don't know who our quarterback is. You can't. Yeah. It's too difficult to be.
That's why we're not previewing teams yet.
Yeah, if you're previewing teams, you're too far ahead.
Yeah. But, June and July, no way. That's why it's talking fantasy. That's why we like to debate players and game flow and see where teams are going.
Exactly.
All right, well, that's the last question, and that marks the end of the show. We may have a show earlier this week. We're both unavailable this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So either myself and Woot will be talking some fantasy football again on Thursday, hopefully with Neil Dutton. We haven't asked him yet, but I'm sure it'll be available. Or if Woot, you're unavailable with work, I'll have a chat with him, and then we'll be back the following week after with some special guests, some fantasy gods.
Some fantasy gods.
Some fantasy gods. Some, and some not us. Gods. Not us. Yeah, we're hopeless, but yeah. It'll be good to chat to players like to fantasy legends like Sigmund Bloom and Rumford Johnny and hopefully Matt Harmon, who now works at NFL.com. So keep an eye out on that. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at JYNFL.
At Josh Woot.
You can follow us on at WootNY. And we're also on Facebook, The Woot and Y Show. We're on Instagram at NFL Podcast. Please, iTunes reviews. We really appreciate them. And yeah. Keep commenting, tweet us any questions for our mailbag next week. Cool. Peace out.
Bye.